This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The Tom Luganville time is Tuesday, man. It's time to rip. Lugs, good morning.
It is.
How are you?
Yep.
Dr. Clausen, paging Dr. Clausen. I told you last week, right? This team's got a little something to them. I'd be worried about playing Wake every week. I know Virginia Tech helped them out, but, man, that little walk-on they got on the back end, just taking the ball away from people. That catch he made in the end zone was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – you know, Luke, here's the other thing, too. We've got two or three teams in the ACC like that. For instance, I'll give you one. I wouldn't want to be messing around with Boston College right now either. I mean, BC looks like – I mean, here they come to Clemson on Saturday, right? And the Tigers are going to be prohibitive favorites, and they're one of the best teams in the country. But for and look, BC may have some things for Dabo Swinney and the Tigers. But Boston College is now running the ball with David Bailey after – I mean, they got him out of the box and took him out of the mothballs and gave him the rock. I mean, and then you got Phil Jurkovec. I mean, Jeff Hafley's done a whale of a job with these guys.
He's done an unbelievable job, but I do think he needs to be concerned. If your quarterback is your leading rusher with 94 yards, that's not good versus Clemson. They're going to have to come up with something to complement that. And listen, I've said for a couple of weeks, it's just odd watching 51 attempts, 56 attempts, 42 attempts, you know, in the air with Boston College. But I think what they've done is they've made themselves so much more difficult to defend than ever before, where you went into a game with Boston College, you know, there's some definitives. They're going to be physical. They're going to want to bloody your nose. You're going to have to stop the run, but probably not a lot of dynamic playmakers, not a lot of creativity offensively to get the ball to those playmakers. And I think those last two I just mentioned is where they've changed the most. They have become so much more diverse on offense, which makes them more difficult to defend. And listen, they'll have Clemson's attention because of the style of play. I think Dabo and the staff respects and knows what they're going to get out of BC. Question is athlete per athlete, can BC match up over the course of four quarters?
Vegas doesn't think so. I'm just saying. Hey, listen, yeah. Clemson's going to be another 4 or 5 touchdown favorite and all that stuff. But, you know, given what they did against Syracuse Saturday, Tom, I suspect that you will see them alert at noon. Again, that's their third consecutive noon kick. And given the fact Jeff Hafley, from his days at Ohio State last year, Hafley knows what Clemson's all about. So that'll have a little edge to it as well. I think Clemson will be alert and ready to roll on Saturday. But Hafley's done a great job. Given no spring, no summer, what he inherited, didn't know that he was going to have his quarterback till late, and to pull off what they've done, sensational job by BC. You know, there's another team that I think the last couple weeks has proven that, hey, we're not throwing in the towel, we're ready to play, and that's Louisville. You know, they went to Notre Dame, and that was a fistfight game, fourth quarter. The Irish had to milk that last 7 minutes and 55 seconds, 12-7 your final. And they just flat-out obliterated Florida State on Saturday. And Malik Cunningham's having a great year.
Yeah, he's really starting to come along. And I'll tell you, the thing that stood out to me about that game, in the first half alone, it was really the difference in the game. In the first half alone, 10 plays from the Louisville offense of 10 yards or more, 8 of those 10 were of 20 yards or more, including a 63-yarder, a 70-yarder, a 48-yarder. And you couple that with the fact that Florida State's passing game was so abysmal, 141 yards on 41 pass attempts. There was just no way once FSU got behind that they're good enough in the passing game to be able to play catch up. I would agree with you. I think that Louisville's showed a ton of pride. Anybody who's watched them, I think, needs to acknowledge that, boy, their offensive personnel is really good. And when they get in sync and they start humming, they're capable of putting up a lot of points on the board, which gives them an opportunity to offset the struggles that they've had on defense. But you're right. Their kids are playing and they're fighting. And when they're hot on offense, they're a tough out as well.
Well, and Mark just gave the number. What was it? A scoring margin of minus 90 now in ACC play for Florida State. Is that right, Pac?
Yep, minus 90. Oh. It's the worst in the league.
Brutal.
I mean, how's that possible, Tom?
When you look at Florida State and you see them in person, you're standing there on the sideline and you're watching them in uniform, you're asking how any of this is possible. There's so many different ways to say it. You've got a bunch of really good-looking athletes that look great in the uniform and, for whatever reason, don't play well. Don't play well as a team. They are a team that, for whatever reason, struggles to handle adversity as well as maybe touching on a little success from what we saw in their upset win. I mean, that team, we talked about it that following Tuesday. When you watched Florida State versus North Carolina, they looked like a different team energy-wise, execution-wise. They were productive. Now, North Carolina helped them out at times, but still there was something different about their makeup, their body language. And ever since then, we've seen nothing even resembling that.
That's what was so disappointing about their effort on Saturday, is you thought that maybe the North Carolina game was a catalyst, kind of like what for Louisville. Hey, even in a loss, they played well, didn't turn the ball over, followed it up with a bookend performance where they were really, really good Saturday. I just didn't get that from Florida State, and that really surprised me. I thought that would be a really close, competitive, high-scoring game, and the Noles just didn't deliver. And I just told Wes that, you know, they've given us two great halves of football so far this year. The second half against Jacksonville State, where they had to show up, and Jordan Travis got the nod, and they were terrific in the second half, but they should be against Jacksonville State. And the first half against North Carolina, where they were up 31-7, and played with their hair on fire, and you're like, man, there's Florida State. Tom, you take those two halves away, and I just mentioned this to Wes, they've been outscored 200-79. Florida State.
That's nuts. And it is nuts. And again, I go back to athletes versus execution. You know, I had a game this past week where with West Virginia, and the one thing I noted on our broadcast was – on defense, their best players are their best effort guys. And when you have that, you've got a chance to be really successful as a football team. And I don't know if there's a spot on Florida State's ball club where you can necessarily point and say, okay, that's a bell cow right there. That's a group right there you can hang your hat on. It's hard to find those moments.
All right, before we finish up this segment, Ian Book on Saturday at Pittsburgh threw the ball vertically and threw it effectively over the course of the ball game. Did Notre Dame turn the page in your mind with their performance at Pittsburgh on Saturday?
Well, it's a tough question to answer because I think Pittsburgh is so off the rails right now. They're just a shell of what we saw early on. They're inoperable on offense. They can't block anybody and they can't run the ball. So Notre Dame had a ton of opportunities on the offensive side of the ball. Did they make strides? Yes. You know, you could make an argument right now that as a weapon downfield, the freshman Michael Mayer is the best player they have on their offense. Well, what does that say? Is that a reflection of Michael Mayer's ability, or is that an indictment on the rest of the crew that they have at their disposal? Because all that guy did, you're seeing it right here, is make play after play after play, and they weren't necessarily easy plays to make. So my concern long-term, if Notre Dame's taking on somebody that is as athletic or as talented, as deep, if not more, in all three of those areas I just mentioned, who else is going to emerge to create the Chase Claypool-type plays? And I'm still a bit concerned about that long-term as the season unfolds when Notre Dame starts playing better people.
Tom, I want to stay on the Pitt theme a second. You mentioned the offensive line can't run the ball. That's been a problem all year, but you know what? I'm going to go to their strength because I was high, high, high on Pitt before the season. I thought they were the sleeper team in the ACC, and they've lost four in a row. And I'm not going to go to no Kenny Pickett, and they can't throw this, and they can't run. I'm going to go to their strength. The first three games of the season, they win them all. They gave up a grand total of 30 points. In this four-game losing streak, they're giving up on average 34.25 points a game. 34 a game. On the defensive side.
Yeah.
Now, we sat there and talked about Florida State, and you just kind of go, they're kind of an enigma. In some respects, I'm going to be transparent here, because I love Pat Narduzzi, and I really was high on this team. But their defense has not gotten the job done. Maybe it's because the offense can't sustain drives. Maybe it's a combination of all of the above. But quite frankly, their defense has come up soft, short. And I know I hate to say it. Pat hates me even saying it. But they've not gotten the job done on the defensive side when it was time to go win a game.
No, you're right. They haven't. But you also touched on something that I do think is very real. And you hear coaches talk about it all the time. And it's not lip service. When you are continually three and out on offense, when you're turning the ball over to the other team on offense, and the defense is continually on the field, not only does it take its toll physically, it can take its toll emotionally. Because now it's like, oh, here we go again. And now your frame of mind is off and you're not as sharp, and your focus is maybe lax because you're now worried about other things that you can't control, as opposed to just going out there and getting yourself a stop on defense. I thought, and we talked about this at the time, NC State, when they had Devin Leary, exposed Pitt on the outside in terms of making the back shoulder throws, making those one-on-one plays that people struggled to make, which meant that the front for Pitt couldn't get to the quarterback because the ball was out so quickly. Then Miami gave him a little trouble with that. But this time it wasn't on the outside. It was on the inside in their passing game, and created some explosive plays there. But I do think there is legitimacy to the overall team dynamic of who Pitt is right now and the adverse effect it's having on their defense.
You got a point there. It's interesting to see kind of halfway through this what the playing personalities are that have developed, right? And who can certainly change that direction and who might be stuck in a rut, so to speak, too, Luke. Because, you know, the way the season works here, especially this season, you start down that downward low, it's going to be hard to bounce back, I think.
Yeah, and I think then you start to point to your maturity, where is your leadership, how healthy are you, not just with injuries, but maybe COVID-related stuff. There are so many negative aspects to this fall that can have an impact on your team. And it's those teams that can block all that stuff out, I think, by and large, that handle. I'm going to use Wake again. Wake coming into the season, you lose Surratt, you lose Jamie Newman, your developmental program, you have a lot of things working against you, and you're sitting there going, all right, how are we going to get our best team on the field each and every week? And will that team be good enough given we're so inexperienced? But that team has been able to block out all of that stuff. They've been able to work past it. They've been able to find answers. I think they're a prime example of what happens when you've got some leadership, you've got some maturity, and you've got some guys that worry about what they can control and not what they can't.
Yeah, good point. Hey, by the way, Pac, did you notice that the Halloween beard is coming in for Lugs this week? Did you notice that? The Halloween beard's kind of coming in for the costume on Saturday?
Well, I really didn't. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. I just thought that a couple days in Texas will do that to a man.
It's almost, right. It's almost my Christmas.
I like it.
I know it is, and we'll touch on that and more. In fact, Pac and I went out on a line, so to speak, with the counting. Tom Luganville is going to go out on a line when we come back. Who's got the best offense in the ACC? A simple question that may not have a simple answer. We'll come back and talk about that when we continue with our man Lugs. 8 o'clock hour rolls on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Our 30 minutes of Tom Luganville continues. We're only at the halfway point. See, counts down the Halloween weekend coming up. We got football this weekend. It's going to be beautiful. All right, Lugs, you ready to go for part two?
I guess so. Lay it on me. Give me the lowdown. What do you need?
This is almost like a Morley Safer type interview right here, Lugs. We're going for the in-depth stuff. Ready?
Sure, yeah. Am I going to get up and walk out? What are we doing?
Wes will be playing the role of Leslie Stahl.
All right.
Here. Who's got the best offense in the ACC right now?
Well, I'm not a big statistical guy, so I don't care how many you passed for, how many you rushed for. I care about how many you scored. Clemson.
I don't know
they
if
scored
I'm concerned
almost 10
about the running
points
game
more
behind ETN
game than everybody else.
I don't know if I'm going to agree with that. I mean, listen, we got two or three that you can really pick from, in my opinion here.
I will say this, though, Pac,
yes,
real
sir?
Quick. I will say this. there is when there was that four series run, and Wes, you were there with no Travis Etienne, was a glaring drop off in production offensively.
Right.
Right.
Right. And that's why I think the answer is North Carolina, in my opinion.
Okay.
Now, again, if these are the two teams standing and you get to pick first, I'm going to be completely happy with the other guy. All right. I mean, they're both that good.
Yeah.
I think North Carolina, when everybody's hitting on all cylinders, this is a fascinating debate. But, you know, there's times with Clemson, I think sometimes, and again, I don't mean this to be critical, but I think sometimes they kind of get bored with the game, Tom. And I know that Dabo hates that kind of stuff because they play to that standard they always talk about. But I thought Saturday was kind of the perfect example. I mean, hey, it's 17-0 before you had your first bite of a barbecue sandwich. It's high noon. They're favored by 1,000. Yeah. And it was almost kind of like, hey, we've been in enough games. We know what we got to do. And they just kind of lost. Yeah, they just kind of lost their focus. And to Syracuse's credit, they played hard. And again, thank goodness Dino Babers' kids are still dialed in and Dino's coaching them up over there. Next thing you know, it's a 6-point game in the third quarter. And then it was time to get cranked up again. Off to the races they go. So, I think the answer is North Carolina, but you may ask me this question next week and I will tell you Clemson.
Well, the one thing that we haven't quite seen yet is North Carolina offensively versus maybe a really good defensive team. Are they going to play a really good defensive team? I don't know if anybody's great on defense, but maybe somebody that can get you off schedule a little bit. It's got some front people that can disrupt you, can force the quarterback to get off platform. We haven't seen a lot of that. And I thought this last week versus NC State, and not having Devin Leary just killed NC State, but I thought the offense was good. I thought they run the football very well. I like their kind of two-headed monster in the backfield there. So, I mean, I can go either way. I mean, I see it. There's times where, like, you know, you look at a bunch of – you look at Louisville sometimes, and you're like, man, would we be talking about that team as potentially being one of the best on offense if they were just a little bit better on defense in the sense that they had – 1 to 2 more possessions on offense each and every week because their personnel guys, holy smokes, they're tough to handle.
Yeah, I think those are the top three.
Well, I said this, I said this yesterday with Chris Childers and Rick Neuheisel. The thing about Carolina and Louisville is we talked about these two teams having to get just a little bit better on defense, right? Just that much better. How much better could you be? Because you knew where they'd be offensively, right, Pac? And Carolina seemingly has done it for the most part. Louisville has not done it. Louisville has not taken that consistent next step on defense. Carolina has at least made a forward motion to get better. Now, can they stay there, keep taking the other step, whatever? We'll find out. I think, you know, when you line up against Virginia and five quarterbacks and three of them in the 90s and two of them were in double-digit numbers, I mean, you know, you'll figure out kind of what you can identify. But – I do believe Carolina is a little better defensively than they were last year. And really, that's all we asked in the offseason.
Well, not only that, Wes, they will – and Mack Brown will fully acknowledge they're nowhere near where they need to be in terms of personnel, both talent and depth, to be considered a defensive stalwart, if you will. And they know, though, and Mack Brown, I think, knows as well as anybody, and it's one of the reasons why they had such a huge – emphasis on the defensive front in this last recruiting class and will continue to do so going forward, that if they load up in those areas, now they start closing the gap with a Clemson and a team where you feel like, okay, if we're somewhat on equal footing offensively, what needs to shift in order for us to really close that gap? And it's in your defensive front seven. They're just not there yet. It's too early in the tenure for Mack Brown.
Tom, where does NC State go, knowing the fact that Devin Leary is going to be out for another 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, whatever the case may be? I mean, they're 4-2. From that perspective, terrific, great news for Dave Doeren.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've also had three games in which they've given up 42, 45, and 48. I mean, we can talk about the quarterback all you want, but, you know, half their games, their defense hasn't stopped a soul. So where do they go now after we get past this bye week and you roll into November?
It's a great question, and I don't have an answer for it, not a clear-cut one, and I don't know if Dave Doeren does either. You know, he's sitting there scratching his head going, why does this keep happening to us? I mean, it's not as bad of a situation as they had a year ago. But what magnifies this situation is if you are as hot as they were on offense, and I thought they were just humming along. They'd gotten into rhythm, and it was helping their defense out. They were difficult to defend. They had balance. You had some explosive plays downfield, and then poof, in the blink of an eye, it's all gone. And I think a lot of it is because of the signal caller. And it's easy to say, well, it may not all be quarterback. Well, in many instances, it is. That changes the fortunes of your entire team. They're going to have to come up with some way, I think, now of really getting creative with how they move the ball, whether it's, you know, not completely deviating from what they are on offense, but maybe having some new wrinkles, having some wildcat stuff, doing some things that they can do to offset the quarterback position, because now they're not that rhythmic offense in the passing game. They don't really have that confidence that they had in the passing game prior to this week. And they don't look like the same team on offense from a body language standpoint. And that's something, when you ask how do you fix it, I don't know if there's ever been a definitive clear-cut answer to that.
All right. We have discussed for the last day and change, the four best teams in the ACC are Clemson, Notre Dame, North Carolina, Miami. Now, the first two in that order, and then you can switch the other two at 3 and 4, depending on if you want, okay? Those are the four
you
top
Notre
teams
Dame's
in the ACC.
Miami?
I'm just putting them in the group of four, okay? We all agree Clemson's one, and then after that, we can go there, okay?
All right.
Pack and I both happen to have Notre Dame, I think, at 2 in accounting. Is that right, Pack? We do, right? I think we both have them at 2. So, that being said, who's the fifth best team in the league right now?
You're killing me. This is going to kill you when I say this.
We told you it was going to be tough. We told you there was layup here. These are thought-provoking, hard-hitting questions in this segment.
Can I get up and leave?
You will momentarily.
No. I'm going to go with Wake. Why not go with Wake?
Wake Forest.
Wake right now. I'm going to go with Wake. I think they're playing good, clean football. The quarterback's going to continue to he's getting better and better and better. And by the way, he's a much better runner than he gets credit for. And that makes their offense a lot more diverse. I think Sam Hartman's playing really good football right now. And this team's growing and growing and growing, getting more and more experienced. And the reason why I say that is I see steady and consistent improvement up the ranks. And the other team I would maybe consider and think about as, okay, who's the fifth best team, is the team that they lost to. But they are so up and down right now that you don't know which team's going to come to the forefront and how they're going to play week in and week out when you're talking about Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that whole cluster of NC State, Boston College, Wake, and Virginia Tech, I mean, it's really on any given Saturday, you could rank them literally in a different position based on what you're going to get.
Yeah, BC's another one too.
Yeah, yeah. But I will tell you, I don't think anybody's going to be real excited to have Wake Forest on the schedule in November. I mean, again, when you start when we get past this week and now we're into November and it's the stretch drive, if you've got Wake Forest on the schedule, that cannot be one of those things you go, oh, great, we got to deal with these guys. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. We don't know. As Wes always says, it's interesting. It really is, because there's still so many unknowns. Even though we've gone into this deep into the season. But I do think the top four are the top four, whatever order you want to put them in, between Clemson, Notre Dame, North Carolina, and Miami. I think two of those four are going to end up in Charlotte, whatever combo you want.
Yep, no doubt. No question.
By the way, the Saturday, I got to see DJ Ui Ungalale throw it on Saturday, Luke.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'll say this. The arm strength is abnormal.
It's abnormal, but the let's just say the strike zone is going to be something that needs to be addressed, because the ball can be sprayed around quite a bit. I think that's the one thing, and not projecting too far forward. But between Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, man, when you had innate accuracy, you had guys that lead guys, throw guys open, all that thing. I think DJ's got tremendous physical upside, tremendous physical talent, big physical guy, strong arm, but the ball sprays around a little bit. And I think that's going to be something that, that Clemson in the future is going to have to adjust with.
I would only add this. It's been a long time. In fact, never on a Saturday have I seen a back foot flick go 38 yards.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah, he can rip it now. There is no doubt.
Oh, wow. All right. Thanks, Tom. Be well. Happy Halloween.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. Dallin Cuff is next on this program. We're going to talk about football pack and hoops. Yep, the ACC's got the number one men's soccer team in the country in Pittsburgh. We will talk to Dallin about that. And basketball and Portuguese, all coming up with Mr. Cuff after this on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Many thanks to Dave Clawson, Tom Luganville. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the show. Dallin Cuff now joins us to talk about a number of different sports. Now, you know, this is the cool thing about when you're one of the 40 under 40, the ability to wear multiple, hats. You know, it's not just a one lane deal. When you deal with Cuff, man, you could go football, you can go basketball, you could go soccer, you can go Portuguese word of the day. This is why the man's one of the 40 under 40 right here. Dallin, first of all, congrats on all that cool stuff, which I know you guys have had some good times with that, you and Jordan Cornett, and again, well-deserved and well-earned. But we are living in very interesting times, aren't we? With all the different stuff going on, we could go multiple routes here, but let's start with soccer, where there's another team in the ACC that's getting a sample of what it tastes like to be number one, and that's the men's program in Pittsburgh, and they are off and running. Boy, are they good.
They are, man. It's crazy, too, because they lost their best player. They didn't lose. Let me correct myself there. They dismissed Edward Keyser early in the season. He's a two-time All-League player. You ask all the coaches, I would argue he's the best pure striker, pure goal scorer in the league. They moved him away one game into the season. They have not missed a beat. I mean, these guys are the leading goal scorers in the league. They've got a ton of talented players, young players, a lot of international players. Jay Vidovich has really sold his program to kids all over the world to come to Pitt and help him build this into a national power. That's where they're at. They're number one in the nation, rightfully so. They got guy Velko Pekovic, Deco Alexander, Valentin Noel leads the league in scoring. And this is a team that before the year we knew would be good. I didn't know they'd be this good. And I'm really interested to see them when they play the crossover games. It's the one thing to say that's different about this year is there's the North region and the South region. Now, the South region has Clemson, Wake Forest, UNC, three top five teams, three teams are winning. And Clemson and Wake, I think, regardless of everybody in the country is playing, those two teams would be in the top three in the country. Pitt does not play them or will not play them in a real game until the ACC tournament here coming up in a couple weeks. So they are outstanding, but I am excited to see them when they play the best of the best because the North region is not as difficult as the South region. It's all relative, though. ACC men's soccer is still the best in the country. These are still really good teams. It's just the question, are they going to – I want to see them play the very best. We won't see it till tournament time, which is kind of cool, though.
I know Jay Vidovich was with you on All ACC last night. He's done this before, building powerhouse programs. What's made it work at Pittsburgh after previous stops in his coaching career?
We actually had him on All ACC last night, and I asked the same question to him. And when he got to Wake, they similarly had never won an NCAA tournament game before when he was assistant there. So he said that going through that experience, understanding what it takes to build the program out, have the pipelines, have the understanding, helped him get there at Pitt and do it in a quicker fashion. Obviously, he was there at Wake for 20 years. He won a national title. So to your point, Wes, he knew exactly what it takes. And to go out there and then and now he had that credibility. Though he said, I got the street cred, which is real. He had street cred when he goes in these living rooms with these kids all over the world to say, hey, if you want to come to the United States and get an education and play the best college kids possible, we can do that and win. I know how to do it. Look at my track record. Look at all the guys I have in the pro game. He has all the tools to sell, and he's done it really well. And last but of course not least, he's a really, really good coach, an outstanding tactician, and he develops his players. So everything a player would want, they can now get at Pitt. Including competing for national titles. So he sold that. He was honest with them. They've come and they've done their part, and they've held up their end of the bargain, and that's where they're at.
We've got a good one tonight on ACC Network. Clemson and North Carolina. It doesn't matter if it's the men or the women. That combination is always going to work when it comes to soccer.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And then these two teams played it. We had the pleasure of calling the game a couple weeks ago. Clemson won in a 2-1 game that was a really, really fun game to watch. And they're both still – Clemson's still trying to figure themselves out. They're still so talented. They lost Robbie Robinson, who was the number one overall pick in the MLS draft. But they still have tons of talented players. They've won three straight games since losing a literal last-second header to UNC. It was the last second of the game. UNC scored on a header, 1-1 nothing. They whipped off three straight wins, and one of them being Wake Forest. So you're going to look at two of the best attacking teams in the country. Kamarni Smith, who just laid in that beautiful ball to James Brighton, you're seeing score there, along with Grayson Barber, Felipe Fernandez. There's so many guys on Clemson, and the same thing on Wake. They've got Machope Chole and Calvin Harris, Kyle Holcomb, all these guys that are really, really talented scorers that are going to be fun to watch these guys go at it again. And we might see round three in the tournament, but good to have it tonight. So if you want to see attacking soccer, you want to see some of those talented kids in college soccer, tonight at 7 o'clock is the place to be. And both those teams are capable and will be competing for a national championship in the spring and for an ACC title here in a couple of weeks.
All right, Dallin, you just mentioned the differences in the regions. What's the story between the South and the North? Is there scoring? Is it defense? What's the chemistry of these two regions, and why is there maybe a little difference between them?
The South has some of the more talented players in the league, the more offensively gifted players in the league.
Sure.
When you look at Clemson and Wake in particular, with those two groups, and some teams that have returned more successful players. I mean, Wake's doing it without two really a lot of injured players too. Justin McMaster and Aristotle Zaris are two quality, all-league capable players that have been hurt pretty much the whole year for them. McMaster just getting himself back in. Zaris is not quite there yet. But those teams in the South have a little more attacking talent and guys that have kind of done it before. Duke, I tip my cap to John Kerr, too. His guys are fighting. Young team that really has bounced back after a horrible year last year. Carolina, the same way. Really historically bad year, they bounced back. In the North region, Notre Dame is tough and physical and smart. Maybe not that gifted on the ball. UVA is the surprise of the year for George Galinovich because they lost a ton. They got Daryl DK right now, guys, is doing great stuff in MLS. He's leading the line for Orlando City. Henry Kessler has been outstanding for New England Revolution. I mean, last year's class is showing to a lot of folks that you can go to college, play college soccer, and come in and have an immediate impact in the MLS. And that's a huge deal because I think people were starting to think that college soccer couldn't be the pipeline that it once was. I think they're recognizing that again. But UVA loses a lot of talent, and they're still trying to kind of rebuild. And we did this game against Virginia Tech. You're seeing the highlights here now if you're on television. And George Galinovich said, our defense really has to be better. Against the Louisville game, we allowed too many chances. And Virginia Tech did the same thing. The problem is last year they were number one in the nation in goals against average. They were outstanding defensively. They were resolute. They were so solid. They've got a lot of youth back there. They've got a lot of youth in the midfield. They have a lot of talent. It's just really young and unproven. I think what we're seeing right now, it's abnormal for a UVA team. They're going to need this season, and he told us he's going to approach it more of like a little bit of a developmental approach more than he has in the past. Usually he plays very European style. Doesn't sub more than three times, although you can in college soccer. Really rides the guys he has and drills them hard, and they're a good tactical team. The problem with that is this year when you're not competing for the NCAA title in the fall, he's going to kind of use this more as a developmental time. And more opportunities for more guys, see what they're doing. And then when you get in the spring, hopefully they will have developed more and they can compete for the ACC and the ACC games they play then, and then maybe a national title. A different approach for him in a group that's usually, you know, top five in the country without a doubt. This year, they're going to fall out of top five rankings. They just lost to Notre Dame. They have a bright future, but they are in the midst of a rebuild.
Dallin, let's switch gears to basketball. Your take with the news regarding the cancellation of the Orlando bubble, and where do we go trying to get started with the college basketball season, which hopefully gets cranked up November 25th?
Let me back up for a second, Pac. Because I've said this multiple times on our network. I just got to reiterate for folks if they haven't heard me say it. The approach to this year makes zero sense to me. We've approached this year like a normal year. And I say we, the collective college basketball world. They have looked at this and we're going to play non-conference games in November. And we'll start our league season in late December, maybe the last couple of days of December. And then we're going to plow through conference games. There's just too many problems with that. We have so many variables right now that we don't know what's going to happen, especially the turn of the new year. Beyond the coronavirus spiking across the country, we reported the most cases we ever have this past week. You have potential changes at the federal, state, and local level in the political world. That's going to happen in January. So that could change the whole thing. The whole dynamic could be flipped on its head. We have no idea what's going to happen there. We do know the NCAA tournament has to be played. We do know you need to play 13 games to get in. So my thing from the very beginning is we should be approaching this that the conference games are the most important. November 25th is the first day you can start. It's also kids are gone from campus. You can completely control your environment when you are a conference. You lay out your protocols, uniform protocols. We could have had an ACC or SEC, every big conference especially, set up your own bubble. It doesn't have to be in some place like Disney World or IMG. You could use a college campus and try to control it and isolate it. You have your bubble there. You bubble kids till from November 25th, basically this first or second, the day or two before Christmas. Let kids go home for about 7 to 10 days, get a mental break, physical break, return to their campuses. Start another bubble in January where, again, all college kids are not on campus yet. You control this environment. You mix the teams up. You have a different bubble there. You could knock out your 13 conference games by, like, January 21st, 25th, and then you move into a phase in the non-conference. You play non-conference games in February, essentially to prepare for the tournament in March because you've already hit your 13 games minimum. You've already bolstered your resume. I mean, the ACC especially, be selfish. Let's get our 13 games against conference opponents. How could the committee, if they look at the ACC that got 15 conference games in, and then you say you look at the SEC's plan is to play all their non-conference games and start December 29th and play an 18-game league schedule and have one week to make up any missed things. We've seen this in ACC football. That's crazy. It's not going to happen. I just see how that works out, especially all the variables I said that are coming that we don't know about. So if you're planning that, you could maybe have 6 SEC games. The committee looking at a team that played 15 ACC games and 6 SEC games and other non-conference games, you're telling me the ACC schedules, the ACC strength of schedule, the ACC metrics won't be way better? It'll help you get more teams in. I think we should have approached this like it's a different year because it is. I think everybody's approaching it like it's a normal year. You could have played some non-conference games in February, get ready for March. You play some of your bye games, so you're giving back to some of the smaller schools that need the money. You're helping the economics of it, but you're also taking care of yourself. And I feel like nobody has done this. And you're really setting yourself up for potentially a complete failure when it comes to getting the most teams in and getting the most quality competition into the tournament, because you still got to hit those 13 games. And that is not a foregone conclusion, as we're seeing with the cancellation of the bubble, because they couldn't control everybody. They couldn't get uniform protocols because you got like 15 different leagues in there. So, of course, you can't control them because you're trying to do it as a partner and kind of, you know, handshaking, working and work in the room versus saying, I'm Commissioner Swofford. I'm Commissioner Bowlesby. Here's how we're doing our bubble. Here's how this thing has happened. We get everybody on the same page. Let's go. We did it in football. We can do it in basketball. But we're not approaching it that way, and I think that's a big miss.
Well, there's an interesting wrinkle to what you're saying, too, because in the last, I guess, week or so, Dallin, because of the delay in the start of the NBA season and the delay in the start of the G League concurrently with what's going to go on, now, all of a sudden, all these regional facilities that these G League teams use, and you know where I'm talking about, like Wilmington, Delaware, College Park, Georgia, Greensboro, North Carolina, all of these G League facilities are now available for, quote, bubbling events involving multiple teams that could be played in a regionally controlled environment. Now, we've seen that Mohegan Sun has stepped up and going to use their facilities to potentially handle some of these events. But in terms of conference play, I'm afraid, and I told Pac this during the break, I'm afraid we're going to end up with just conference games. And that may be okay this year, given all the climate we're working through, because it seems like there's just too many differences with most of the scheduled non-conference ideas.
100%. And I do think it's probably a lot of times it's power conference teams versus power conference teams that want things in their certain way to be done, and they want to try to protect the game and at times not skirt some of the rules by the CDC, but when you read that article from The Athletic about what happened with ESPN and some folks I talked to, it's they want the rules to be a little more lax. And as the intermediary, being ESPN, or if it's any person that owns the property, you're going to try to want that thing to be as airtight as possible and have as stringent protocols as possible. Because if anything goes wrong, it's on you. And you have to be able to take care of the player and take care of the situation to not let it create an outbreak. So you have to be coming in with one point of view, whereas the schools a lot of times are coming in with, okay, if this kid gets COVID here, I don't want them out for 14 days, or if they already had it, they don't need to be tested after just 90 days because I want them to play. There's different motivations that aren't there for the property in the same regard. To your point, Wes, if we only have conference games, that's for the very beginning. I've said that should have been the priority, and that's all you get. That's all you get. But you tell me, if you don't get in 18 ACC games, that's not going to give you a really good schedule in this year, in 2020. Yes, we can't think of it in the concept of what used to happen. We got to think about what is going on in 2020, and that's where the biggest issue is. We keep these are pipe dreams, and we think we're going to play 27 games, and we're going to get all these great non-conference games and some bye games and some other quality competition games, and then we get our league season. That seems like the most naive thing. The NFL went in kind of naive in terms of how they approach their schedule. They're trying to figure it out. They're shuffling the deck all over the place. They may have to add an extra week at the end of the season, and that may not be enough. We've already postponed or delayed or canceled 40 different games in college football. We're 8 weeks in, and that's only with half, like some of the teams 8 weeks in. Like, I mean, we're looking at a season in basketball. Yeah. You think you're going to span 4 or 5 months and not have some massive, massive repercussions through this thing? It seems bananas.
All right, before we let you go, it would only be fitting if we ask you for the Portuguese word of the day.
You did have the Georgia Tech coach on the other day, and I like that. But, you know, she gave you Beleza, which I
don't know, which is one of your originals. Well. Yeah, that's right.
One of the first
ones.
Yeah,
it's one of the originals.
I will give you doido. Doido, which I probably can guess given my rant I was just on. D-O-I-D-O means crazy. Because that's essentially how I think we're approaching this whole situation. Crazy.
I will use this one. Give me that one again. Doido. Is that how you say it?
Doido. Doido. D-O-I-D-O. Wes, what's up? Can I get a code? Can I get a PlayStation code? Doido. What you got?
I know that you're upset with me because you're on a PS system and I'm on an Xbox, but just wanted you to see I was armed and ready.
You know what I might do? Doido. This is insane. I might have to go rent an Xbox somewhere, and just so we can get a game or two in.
No,
just
I'm not
so I can smack
you
around a bit, and then I'll be out.
No, I'm not playing you. Not playing. Game's over. Thanks, Dallin. Right. Be well, man. Take
Congrats.
Care.
All right, fellas. Have a good
one. All right. Dallin Cuff. All right, man. You too. Don't forget tonight on ACC Network, not all ACC, another installment of E.J. Manuel and Kelsey Riggs with In Play. They're joined by Duke women's basketball coach Carol Lawson, plus America's favorite new game pack, Hold Up or Nah Next. In Play tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern, only on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, sit tight. When we come back, results from yesterday's wide receiver U voting are in. Oh, Ben Skoranek will be on this show. Is he this week's winner? Or Mecca Mezzi? Or Tony Poljan? We'll let you know next on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Dallin Cuff, always insightful, opinionated. One of the 40 under 40 in the world of college hoops. Soccer. He can go a lot of different ways on you, man. That's what I like, Dallin Cuff. Yeah, you got it.
Doido? The word, doido?
Crazy. Doido. You're all over it. Portuguese word of the day. Good, and that's why we like having Cuff on here.
I like it.
Smart guy. All right, wide receiver Wes.
All right. Yeah, and one of our candidates, Ben Skoranek of Notre Dame, coming up here in just a moment on the show in the Power Hour. Let's get to the results of yesterday's wide receiver U, shall we? The winner, and a tight race, by the way, Pack, a very tight race. Virginia tight end Tony Poljan wins this week's edition of Wide Receiver U. So here's the throw from Brennan Armstrong Saturday night at the Hard Rock. Yeah. Best catch of the week is voted on by the fans at ACC Network.
A lot of candidates this week.
You good with this one?
Yeah, I am. I thought that the final four were all good, and whoever won would certainly be worthy. But, yeah, I'm cool with this one. I am.
There you go. Mark Pope, second, and then Mecca Mezzi, Ben Skoranek as well in the mix. As a great catch by Tony Poljan. All four very, very worthy candidates. Quick trip through the ACC Football Players of the Week. The quarterback was Ian Book of Notre Dame. The running back, Javian Hawkins of Louisville, was on fire in the first half against Florida State. Mike Harley of Miami, the wide receiver of the week. Liam Eichenberg of Notre Dame, the offensive lineman of the week. Boogie Basham of Wake Forest, the lineman. Chaz Surratt, the linebacker. Was there any doubt Nick Anderson was going to be the DB and rookie of the week out of Wake Forest after a 3-interception game? And the specialist of the week was Clemson punter Will Spires, who had something like a 70-odd yard punt in the ball game Saturday against Syracuse. So that's a quick check of the wide receiver U and the ACC football players of the week. Any thoughts there, sir?
No, congrats to all. I mean, all four nominees for wide receiver U were outstanding. The winner got no problem with it. Players of the week, no issue at all. And if Nick Anderson wasn't on that list, they should have just shut it down. Shut it down.
That's exactly right. Cancel 11
tackles,
the whole process.
Three
that's
interceptions. If he's not on the list, shut it down. But I'm good with everything that you saw on the screen.
That's it. All right, excellent. Other side note from football before we get to Ben here in a moment. Mark Gilbert, the unfortunately often injured defensive back at Duke, has opted out and declared for the 2021 NFL draft. He had two games before and this year before having surgery on his right foot. This also is the latest injury of Gilbert's unfortunate spell in his career. He had a hip injury a couple of years ago, ironically in a game at Northwestern, and was lost for that year and was affected by it a lot of last year, and then came back this year and is injured again. And his career is now over at Duke, and he will go ahead and get ready to see if he can make it in the 2021 NFL draft. And we wish Mark Gilbert all the best. Sit tight. Coming up, Power Hour on this show. One of the really interesting stories in Saturday's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh game was the emergence of the vertical game from Ian Book. It's always been there. Tom Luginbill was talking about its effectiveness with us earlier in this hour. And when we come back in the Power Hour, Ben Skoranek will join us, a grad transfer to the Irish program from Northwestern and the recipient of two touchdowns on Saturday against the Panthers. So looking forward to catching up with him and diving in a little bit more to what Notre Dame has gone through. So we're looking forward to joining Ben Skoranek when we come back. Packer and Durham's third hour continues right after this on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.